I'm just going to apologize now. I just realized I left my microphone on ever since I was up here, so you guys probably had to hear me sing, unless they were quick up there and turned me to. Oh, he got me. Oh, he's on the ball. Great. This past week, my wife asked me what I was preaching on today, and I told her the title of the sermon, Giant Problems, or Giant Problems. And she said, oh, David and Goliath, huh? And I said, no, not David and Goliath, but yeah, David. And she stopped for a second. And, she's really quick with her wit. And she says, was his wife really that big? And that was her, not me. I didn't go there. But, he did have some self-inflicted wife problems. But Those were his self-inflicted wife problems were from the fact that he had several of them instead of just one. But we're not going to talk about that today. But we are going to talk about that in a few weeks because I've put out input for requests for sermon topics. And I've received a few, and one of them is to talk about what the Bible has to say about polygamy and things like that, because, you know, you've got people like David, and you've got things in the New Testament that talk about it. And also, if anybody out here has some sermon topics, normally I preach expository sermons where I take a chunk of Scripture and I open that up. But I am interested in doing some topical sermons that are of interest to you folks. So if there's a particular biblical topic that you would like to hear preached about, put that down on a piece of paper or whatnot, give that to me or shoot me an email or something, whatever you like. And over the next many weeks, I'm going to be talking or speaking about different topics for sermons instead of doing expository preaching. So if there's something you've just been wanting to hear, just let me know and we'll go over that. You got to figure out where I was. Okay. Today, I want to tell you that nearly every single person here, possibly every single person here, has been brainwashed. Almost all of you, or possibly every single person here, has been brainwashed. That's right. You have been programmed to do and say certain things without even thinking about it. Now, I'm not talking about religious stuff. I'm not about to tell you that we're secretly a cult and without you realizing it, we've hypnotized all of you, and with a certain word command, I could have you walking around and clucking like a chicken. That's not what I'm talking about. But in certain ways, with certain responses, you have been brainwashed. You have been programmed. And it's not just people in our church, and it's not just people that go to church. It's virtually everybody in our society has been brainwashed and pre-programmed. Do you want to see this in action? You want to see me demonstrate this? You're supposed to say, yes, Kevin. Okay. Now, I've forewarned you, so half of you are going to be like, all right, I got to be ready for this. So don't do that. Just respond in the way that you've been programmed to respond. Don't fight it. Just go with it. Are you ready? Hi, how are you? That's exactly right. That is what you have been programmed to answer. That is what you are expected to answer. I was asked four times today, this morning, hi, how are you? Not once, because of what I'm preaching on, did I say, fine, thanks. I kind of went into it a little bit. And you know what I got? Surprised looks. I didn't just say, the people are like, he didn't just say fine. Why do we have, let me tell you something. You want to test this, throw some people off this week. I accidentally, twice in like the past month, just because I had my mind on other things and I wasn't really thinking, I didn't give the correct response. It's like they said, hi, how are you doing? And I didn't even answer that question. I said something totally different. Once I was at the sheriff's department, and you know, admittedly, the guy going this way had a place to go, and I had a place to go this way. And he said, "Hi, how you doing?" And I said, "Yep, sure." And we both, and I guarantee you, he did not even realize that I did not answer the question that he asked. I answered something totally different. I mean, I was like five steps down the hall before I went, "That's not right." We have been programmed to do this. "Hi, how are you?" Why is it? Why do we give that response of "Fine, thank you"? And maybe if you have a lot of time, or it's a situation where you're not moving away from each other, you might say, "Fine, how are you?" And they respond, "Fine, thanks." Why do we do this? Do you know who doesn't, or who didn't, answer this way? My grandmother did not answer this way. And if you asked my grandmother, "How are you doing?" be ready to take a seat. Because she was going to list off everything that wasn't going fine. You just sit down and she'd tell you about every ache and pain that she's been going through. And partially, that's why we say, "Fine, thanks." Because when people don't, sometimes we, as the person who asked it, are like, "Oh, crud, I'm going to be trapped here for 45 minutes. But we're needing to not just say, "Fine, thanks." We're needing to be telling people the truth. Now, that doesn't mean that you air all your dirty laundry with the guy walking down the hall that you see twice a week at your work. But we need to not have that automatic response of "Fine, thanks." Sometimes we need to be open and honest with each other, but sometimes there's a problem when we do that. I want to tell you about something that happened. This was told to me. I don't know this firsthand, but it was told to me. We were at a monthly meeting of Restoration Movement churches in my area when I lived up in Michigan. And there was a lot of us. There was like 30 people within 30 churches or so within 30 miles. So we all got together once a month and we'd talk as ministers and go over things. And we had a speaker in to address us one month. And he happened to be, at that time, he was the president of my alma mater. And he was talking to us. And he was sort of addressing a very similar thing to this. He said that he, when he was a really young man, when he was in his early 20s, fresh out of Bible college, in his first full-time ministry, he was in one of these preachers' groups that gets together. And he had been at his first church for many months, 6 to 8 months, I think, and he went to this meeting, and they sat down, and that was a smaller group. It was probably only about a dozen guys or so. And the guy who was leading it, they're all sitting in a circle, and the guy who's leading it says, "Well, what we do here is we just share what's going on in our lives, in our ministries together, so that we can be a little bit of a support." And he says, "Since you're new, you go first." So you got this young, early to mid-20-year-old guy, and he said, "You know what? I was so glad that they had asked me." He said, "I was a little bit nervous, but this is what they do." So he's like, "You know what, guys? I'm struggling." He says, "I'm frustrated with some things at the church. I'm having family problems. My wife had a baby last year, and so things are changing with her, and things are changing with our lives, and I'm having issues with that." And he says, "I'm struggling with this sin, and I'm struggling with that sin." And they all sat there and kind of nodded, and he got done, and the guy went to the next one and said, "Okay, how about you?" And he just said, "Fine, thanks." And went around the circle, and every other guy there was like, "I'm doing great." And he was like, "Ah!" And that's one of the reasons that people don't do this. Another reason may be that you've shared with somebody the pain or the problems in your life, and they've used it against you. They've been wrong with that information. They've not been trustworthy people. And sometimes those things happened. Sometimes they do happen. And so we start to just kind of not answer those questions. We say, fine, thanks, and we go on. But in reality, most of us, at least half of the time, are not fine, thanks. Near the end of 2 Samuel, right near the end of the stories about the mighty King David, just before it talks about his death, there's this neat little section tucked away right at the end of talking about the wonderful, powerful King David, where it's out of chronological order and it just goes back and it talks about some other things that happened during his life. There's a lot of other things that go on. This is talking about King David, somebody who by many people's standards is considered to be the greatest king in the history of Israel. And I want you to follow along with me as we go through 2 Samuel chapter 21, verses 15 through 22. There was war again with the Philistines and Israel. And David went down together with his servants, and they fought against the Philistines. And David grew weary. And Ishbi-benob, one of the descendants of the giants, whose spear weighed 300 shekels of bronze, and who was armed with a new sword, thought to kill David. This guy is coming down, and he says, "You are toast. I'm coming for you, David." But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and attacked the Philistines and killed them, or the Philistine, and killed him. Then David's men swore to him, "You shall no longer go out with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel." After this, there was again war with the Philistines of at Gob. And I can't pronounce that guy's name. Then Sibekai the Hushathite struck down Saph, who was one of the descendants of the giants. And there was again war with the Philistines at Gob. And Elhanan, the son of Jeroregam, the Bethlehemite, struck down Goliath the Gittite, whose spear was like a weaver's beam. Now, I want to interrupt just for a second here. That sounds like, wait a minute, Goliath. I thought David killed Goliath. David did kill Goliath. And if you look in 1 Chronicles 20, verse 5, it tells us that it was Goliath's brother whom Elhanan killed. And it's possible that there was just a couple words left out in some of the copies here that we got of the Bible. So when it says here that Goliath was killed, it actually, when you double check that where it's listed elsewhere, it's Goliath's brother. This guy was also coming after David. These guys wanted David's head. These were relatives of Goliath, and David had slew Goliath, and these guys wanted David killed. And David wasn't up to the task anymore. So other people stepped in and helped. And there was war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature who had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in number. And he also was descended from the giants. And when he taunted Israel, Jonathan, son of Shemai, David's brother, struck him down. These 4 were descended from the giants in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. This is stuff that happened during the wars King David led against Israel's enemies. David was a living legend as a warrior. He was a guy that everybody thought he is the indestructible, mighty warrior of Israel. David was having songs written and songs sung about him while he was still going out to war. He was already a legend. He was the guy that every guy wanted to be and every girl wanted to be with. He was David. Just two chapters after this, there are sections dedicated to David's mighty men, basically amazing warriors who did deeds most would think of as impossible. They were the first special forces unit, and their names struck fear into the hearts of their foes, and David was chief among them. He was the guy who, as a 14-year-old, went up against the biggest foe, Goliath, that anybody had ever seen. Just to point out to you how big and bad Goliath was, when it talks about this guy who was coming after David when David was weary, and it says that his spear was this many shekels, that's a 15-pound spear. Do you know what it takes to chuck a 15-pound spear? That's big. That's heavy. Goliath's spear was twice that big. And oh, by the way, I love science. I love archaeology because people wrote this off as a myth. Nobody's ever been that big. Nobody has a spear that big. Guess what they found back in the early 60s right in this area? They found a spearhead 26 inches long and so huge no person could throw it more than a couple of feet as far as today's standards. And they said, well, this can't be a real spear because nobody could chuck that. Instead of going, oh, wow, gee, what the Bible said is true. There were guys with these gigantic spears. 15 pounds, by the way, Goliath's spear. 7.5 pounds, this other guy's spear who was coming after him. Just gigantic. So David is out there. David had killed the biggest dude there ever was listed. And they hated him for it. And people were coming for him. And David is out there and he's doing battle. But guess what? David has gotten a little bit old. David isn't the strapping young buck anymore. And he's out there going to battle and he gets tired. He is worn out. He can no longer fight. And this giant sees him and says, I am coming for you, and you are a dead man. He was coming at him with a giant spear and it says a brand new sword. He had an axe to grind and he was going to grind it on David. And there was nothing. Let me drive that home. There was nothing that David could do about it. Fortunately, Abishai was there. Abishai runs in. Abishai had been David's close friend from the times before he was king. When David was on the run from Saul, Abishai was there with him. Abishai was the head of the mighty men, the special forces unit, the world's first. Abishai was the head of it. And he saw that his friend and his brother Israelite was in trouble. And he didn't wait to see if things were okay. He didn't ask David if David needed help. Abishai was paying attention. And he ran in when David was in trouble. And he slew the giant that was about to take David out. Now, I know that some of you are probably thinking, well, David wasn't necessarily going to die just because he himself couldn't fight. It was the Lord, after all, who gave David victory in battle. It was the Lord who allowed him to kill Goliath. God would have intervened on David's behalf and defeated this other giant. And what I'm telling you is that God did intervene. He sent Abishai. He didn't have to speak words of prophecy to him. He didn't have to speak words of instruction. Abishai saw that his brother was in trouble, in need, that he was not, in fact, fine. And he went in to help. Now, we might not be mighty men slaying real giants, but that does not change the fact that we, as New Testament Christians, are not supposed to be doing the same thing. Turn with me, if you would, to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, You who are spiritual should restore him with a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. What this makes clear to me is that not only are we supposed to step in and help if we see that something is about to happen, but we need to step in ever so carefully even after something has happened. And that we're also supposed to be bearing one another's burdens. This means that when we know that someone is not fine, that we help them in whatever way that we can. Even if that's just sitting with them and praying with them. It also tells me something about the person who thinks that they're strong enough to make it and manage it on their own. It says they deceive themselves. David was the greatest warrior in the history of Israel, and David needed help. Turn with me to Romans chapter 12, if you would. Romans 12, 14 through 16. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Sometimes we might find ourselves in that situation, like when my grandmother would list off all the things that were wrong with her, and you know, you're just going to get an earful. And perhaps if we're really honest, we don't really want to hear about it for the 92nd time. But it should matter to us, because it matters to them. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. We aren't supposed to be going through the troubles of this life on our own. Now, for those with spouses, they are the ones who are almost always going to be our first line of help. But they should not be our only line of help. We need to be bearing one another's burdens, and sometimes a person cannot share their burden with their spouse because their spouse is already having more than they can bear. And they don't want to put more on them. This to me is when a Christian needs the friendship of another Christian to fill that gap. And I think that sometimes it's necessary for a Christian man to go and be talking with another Christian man. And the same for Christian women. Sometimes having your spouse help you with that isn't what's really needed. You need somebody who understands you a little bit more, because you know what? Men don't understand women, and women don't understand men. It's been that way since eternity, and it will always be that way. We aren't meant to be going through our lives on our own and only having one or no other person to help us along is not good. Now, I'll tell you something. When I was in Bible college and they're training us to go into ministry, I had more than one experienced veteran minister tell me, Kevin, actually they didn't say Kevin because they were talking to a group of us. They said, don't share your failings with the people in your church because they'll eat you alive. And I thought, oh, come on. Maybe that's how things were back in the 60s. But you know what? I was at a church quite a while back, and I ignored that advice, and they ate me alive. They used everything that I shared with them against me. But that's not how we're supposed to deal with things. And at this church, I don't know, it was last spring, about a year ago, things were rough. Things were hitting me left and right. And I had a wedding, daughter getting married coming up, and I was stressed out to the max. And I shared that with the elders here at this church. And you know what they did? They prayed with me. And they gave me a week off. And they said, you need to relax and not be dealing with all this stuff right now. And we need to be willing to share things. Now, sometimes there's things that you don't just share with anybody at all. And you don't want to just share bad things, really rough stuff with people that don't really know you very much. And we're going to do an exercise here in a minute. Don't worry. This isn't going to hurt. This isn't going to be painful at all. This is just an exercise. It's very simple. If you are not sitting near somebody, move over near somebody. Or you can be in a group of three if you want. And I'm going to go over here by Janet because she's sitting by herself. What we're going to do is, we're going to do it both ways. One person is going to say that brainwashed question. They're going to say, how are you doing? And the other person is going to say, I'm actually not fine. Would you pray for me this week? And then we're going to turn it around the other way. No more than that. Nothing more necessary for here. But I want you to turn to somebody and say, one of you, don't both say it at the same time, how are you doing? And the other person answers, I'm not actually fine. Will you pray for me this week? How are you doing? I absolutely will. I'm not actually fine. Would you pray for me this week? Thank you. Now, you see how easy that was? I'm betting that at least half of you this morning, as you were passing somebody here, they said, how are you doing? And you said, but now you didn't say that. And here's what I want you to do. This week, do what you just said you were going to do. Think about the person that you said, how are you doing? And they said, I'm not actually fine. Will you pray for me this week? And you don't need to know the details right now. And sometimes that's how it needs to be. But pray for that person this week. And they're going to be praying for you. Because doesn't matter how big, how tough, how strong you are, David was the most mighty warrior, and he got tired. And he got worn out. And if it wasn't for his friend, he would have been dead. But God sent his friend to help him through his bad time and to slay that giant for him. Now, I would encourage you. I had somebody ask me, I don't know, a few weeks back, hey, is there somebody in the church that you think would be good for me to talk with and bounce things back and forth and accountability-wise? And I haven't gotten back with them yet because I racked my brain a little bit and I wasn't really coming up with a quick answer. But I'm going to figure that out and help that person find somebody that they can do that with. And you might need that also. And I encourage you to do that. Now, you might be thinking, Kevin, you're not preaching the gospel. You're not preaching Jesus is the only way to heaven today. You know, you're right. That's not what I'm preaching today. But I'm still preaching out of the Bible. Because there's a whole lot of stuff in the Bible. And not every single week is it Jesus is the only way to heaven. But Jesus is the only way to heaven. And if you haven't accepted him yet, I'm going to invite you to do so right now. Please stand as we sing.